Welcome to this program of the Bay Gourmet Forum of the Commonwealth Club, Entrepreneurial Women in the Food Business. Our panelists are Kika Bescher, owner of Kika's Treats, a small artisanal company that handcrafts chocolate-covered organic baked goods, which you tasted outside. Gabrielle Feuersinger, owner of Cake Coquette, a custom wedding cake and specialty cake design company. Molly Fuller, owner and president of Hands On Gourmet, a cooking party and culinary team building company. And Nona Lim, owner of Cook SF, a ready-to-cook meals-to-go company. And I am Kathy Curtis, financial planner and chair of the Bay Gourmet Forum of the Commonwealth Club and moderator of tonight's panel. It has been my pleasure to bring together this panel of smart, driven, independent businesswomen who have built businesses from the ground up. For all of you thinking about starting a business or have a business now, I'm sure you will learn from these women's triumphs and challenges. And as you probably all know, it is never as easy as it looks. So to begin, I've asked each panelist to take a few minutes to tell us about themselves and their businesses. So starting with Molly Fuller.
I'm Molly Fuller with Hands On Gourmet. We offer private cooking classes for team building and other celebrations. Groups, what that means is groups come together, cook together alongside professional chefs, and then eat together. And most of our business is corporate. They hire us for all different reasons. It could be for fun, it could be an icebreaker, could be kickoff to a product launch, just about anything. We started in October 2004. I have two partners, a personal note, something I do on the side is volunteer for CUESA, Center for Urban Education about Sustainable Agriculture, and that's it.
Thank you. Kika?
Kika Bescher. Actually, my name is Christina, but Kika is my nickname, a family nickname, and I started Kika's Treats, which is a line of chocolate-covered organic baked goods, handmade here in San Francisco with mostly local and organic, whenever possible, ingredients. I've been in business since December 2006. I'm part of La Cocina, a nonprofit food business incubator in the Mission District, which helps small businesses, mainly low-income businesses, to start and grow. And I've moved here from Brazil in 1999 with a completely different idea of what to do with my life, which was to study fundraising and administration for nonprofits. But then I fell in love with the city, realized what a culinary mecca it was, and decided to pursue a career in the food world, particularly with pastries and sweets, because I'm a big sweet tooth from an early age, and I've been baking as well since a very early age, and decided to completely change my career. So when I was introduced to La Cocina, I fell in love with it and decided to start my own business.
Hi, I'm Nona Lim, and I'm the owner of Cook SF. What we do at Cook SF is that we deliver healthy gourmet meal kits to our customers in the Bay Area. And the meal kits basically come in cooler bags with all of the ingredients prepped, marinated, ready to cook. So this allows my customers to enjoy a nice, healthy gourmet dinner at home without going through, you know, all the prep time required. We started this business back in 2006. And before that, I was actually living in London for about 8 years. And I'm from Singapore originally. And when I first moved to the Bay Area, I found that, wow, this area has fantastic produce. But if you're really busy, it's hard to enjoy all this good food because you don't have time to get all the ingredients during the week and prep everything and put everything together. And that's why I started the business. When I'm not working on my business, I'm busy fencing. That's pretty much my other passion, fencing and food.
Hi, my name is Gabrielle Feuersinger, and my company is Cake Coquette. I specialize in high-concept art cakes, so I do a lot of wedding cakes, and I also do a lot of 3D sculpture cakes, and even for more simpler cakes, everything is very personalized and one-of-a-kind. I'm a San Francisco native, so I was, you know, born and raised here, but I've been working in different cities, Seattle, and I was most recently working in Los Angeles with a company called the Cake Divas, where I really learned the skill set to to start my business. And what else did I want to say? Most recently, what's happening with me right now, I'm sort of preparing to hire my first employee. And I'm also going to be in a DVD called Cooking for the Clueless, and I'm the featured baker, so that should be coming out soon. Very exciting. So,
great. Thank you. Okay, inspiration. I mean, starting a business is not an easy thing, and usually it's because you have a passion for a product or a service, or you want to escape the corporate world, you want some freedom. So I'm wondering, what inspired all of you to start your businesses? And why don't we start at the other end? With
So I come from a family of entrepreneurs, and it was sort of written I was going to have my own business, and I had a personal goal to do that before I was 30, which I did. And I also have, my mother is French Moroccan, so I've had been surrounded with amazing food my whole life. And it was inevitable that I'm obsessed with food and especially pastries. So it just took a matter of time experimenting to figure out what niche I would go into. But it would always be in the food industry. So
I think, Kathy, you quoted probably a few of the reasons for me for starting the business that I did. One is passion, and the second is probably to escape the corporate world. So before that, I was working in London. I was in software consulting, so something completely unrelated to the field that I'm in now. But I've always had a passion for food, and I believe firmly that food has to taste good and has to be good for you. And when I had the opportunity to move here with my husband, I thought, you know, I could spend a few months working in the Silicon Valley. There's lots of high-tech jobs available. Well, 4 years ago, maybe not now, or I could take that time to try something that I've always had a passion for. And I thought, you know, why don't give it a try? You know, I'll try it for a year or two, and if it doesn't work out, I can always go back and do what I was doing. And 1 year led to the next year, I thoroughly enjoy what I'm doing, and I think I'm pretty much going to be doing this for a very long time.
Well, on top of passion and trying to escape the corporate world as well, basically, I can clearly say that what really inspired me to start my business was La Cocina. I had always dreamt since when I was a kid of one day owning a bake shop and coffee shop, but I never really thought it would be possible. I mean, I just don't know. I just followed such a normal route, you know, studying, going to college, and going to the workforce, and never thinking that my dream could become true. So when I moved here and started working with food and realized how much I loved it and how natural it came to me, I just decided that I was going to be learning as much as I could, which meant working for different venues, restaurants, catering companies, bakeries, and figuring out what I really wanted to do, and in the meantime, learning as much as I could. So when in 2005, a friend of mine introduced me to La Cocina. It had just opened in October 2005. I completely fell in love with the place, and then I thought to myself, this is my chance to jump in and start my business. So actually, I wrote a business plan, which was completely different product from what I have right now. I just wanted to get accepted to La Cocina. And once I was there, I started testing recipes and trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I went back to Brazil for a month, and I was eating honey cakes all the time. It's something I grew up eating and baking, and I love it. And there's nothing like that here. So I decided to change my product, and I then just decided to start selling. So for those of you who don't know what La Cocina is, it's a food business incubator in the city, in the Mission District, and it's geared for low-income Latina women. It's actually open to anybody who's low-income right now, and it's funded primarily by the Women's Foundation of California, and it's a wonderful organization, really worth getting to know here in the city.
What inspired me to start my business was I wanted to make money. And my dad always told me, do it for yourself, work for yourself. That's sort of the way to make a lot of money. So that was it. And it took a while to get to the business I'm in. It wasn't like, oh, yeah, I want to start a cooking class party company. But one thing led to another, and that's it. But money was the driving force.
We'll find out if she's made lots of it later.
I also wanted to comment on La Cocina. You can also, we're a mobile company, and you can also rent La Cocina. So we actually stage some of our parties there. So it's anyone can rent it for a party.
Great. Okay, Kika mentioned that she had to do a business plan for La Cocina. And usually that's the reason people do business plans, because they have to. But most books about business and business consultants will say you should really have a very specific written business plan before you start, so you know when you're going to be profitable, things like that. And I'm wondering if our panelists put a business plan together or not. Molly, would you like to start?
I did not.
I kind of did in the 8 months that I was getting my business off the ground, but that wasn't how I started. You know, I started by thinking about the idea, by looking at what was available in London where I was still at, and coming across. What I did then was I jumped in and decided that I was going to do a pilot. You know, instead of trying to get a lot of money or spend a lot of money renting places, I found 20 friends and said, can I deliver you food for a month, once a week? And at the end of it, I ran a couple of focus groups with my friends and say, well, what did you like about the product? What don't you like about it? What worked for you? And I just got all the feedback from them about pricing, about what they liked. And a couple of their feedback really made it into how I defined my service. Two things that my friends really liked was they really liked the aspect of cooking. So if you see out there now, you get a lot of food delivery businesses that give you food that's completely cooked that you just reheat and microwave. But I had stuff whereby you have organic Fulton Valley chicken that's marinated but not yet cooked and vacuum packed. So it meant that they had 20 minutes to cook it, to enjoy that process of it. And they say, you know what, the stuff that you gave us that you just microwave, we don't enjoy it as much as the cooking bit. And the other bit that we really like about that 1 month was we didn't have to order. We just know that every Wednesday the food is going to be there. I don't have to think about it. I was like, oh, wow. So those were ideas that I didn't even think of when I was designing my business plan or planning how everything's going to work. But by doing that focus group, that pilot, I learned some stuff that was really useful, and I worked that into the business. So what I would definitely recommend is I think business plans are good, but don't hold yourself back because you have to spend 3 months writing a big document. You know, just do a little experiment. 1 month, it doesn't cost you that much time or that much money, and you can learn so much just by trying it out.
Yeah. Gabrielle?
I do not have a business plan either. And I didn't really think I need one. I still don't think I need one. I'm self-funded, so I wasn't pitching a bank, so I didn't feel like I needed to justify to anyone what I was doing. I sort of knew what I was doing in my mind and just sort of figured it out. So,
Kika?
Yeah, well, I do have a business plan. It's not a solid business plan, and it has had many changes, and I totally feel like I need to revise it right now, because I feel a business plan, even though if it's in your mind, somehow you have to put something down in the paper, especially your numbers, and just visually see where your company is going, how numbers are affecting your business, and I wish I had a better solid business plan when I started, but you know, it's a work in progress, and I learn as I go, and you can never project what the market is going to be, whether they're going to like your product or not, no matter how much you taste it or not, but still it's a good solid thing to have when you start a business.
We keep track of our financials month to month, even week to week, so though we don't have a business plan, we still know where we're at on a daily basis, so.
For me, I thought after I did my pilot group, I did then use the information there, and I used that to look at putting together a business plan, which I thought was useful because I needed to understand what sort of pricing, you know, do I need to set my products at? How many products do I actually need to sell to break even? And organic produce could cost easily 2 to 4 times more expensive than non-organic produce. And am I actually costing it correctly? What should be the cost of goods? What percentage of that should that be compared to the sales price? So I would definitely recommend doing a business plan just to understand the numbers, especially if you're going to be selling a lot of SKUs, you know, things that are product related. And you may find that things don't work out the way you think they would according to the business plan, but it's a good starting point. And then you can reflect on it a year later and see, well, you know, what do I want to change or what was wrong about my assumptions? So I would say, for me personally, I thought it was useful to have one, but not to be stuck about not doing anything until you get one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. As a financial planner, I really think you need a business plan. Because a lot of companies, they don't make enough money, and it's because they didn't project things correctly. And I think even if you start a business and you don't have a plan, don't be afraid to start up one right then when you're ready. And just don't say, well, I don't have one, so I'm not going to do one. I think it's really important to plan. Okay, this is a similar subject. This is about funding. Businesses need money. And right now, especially with the credit crisis, there's not a lot of money to be had. And even before the credit crisis, if you don't have a history of income and sales, it's hard to get money. So I'm wondering, how did you all fund your startups when you were starting up? And Kika, you want to start?
Sure. Yeah, I basically started with $8,000 of my own savings. I applied for a small loan with Lenders for Community Development, which is an organization here in the city downtown affiliated with Renaissance Entrepreneurship Center. And then as my business needs grew and so did the need for more capital, then I was introduced to another nonprofit in the city, actually to a nonprofit in the city called TMC Working Solutions, from which I got a loan of $25,000. And they're actually the new agency in the city responsible for lending the revolving loan fund for the city, which Mayor Gavin Newsom just announced about a month ago. And they're an amazing organization. They do, not only do they lend the money, but they also, you have a like monthly, not goal meetings, but they keep track of my finances. I mean, I don't mind sharing with them because they do help me out. They set up consultations for me at SPDC, and whenever I need any kind of mentoring, they're more than happy to help me. So those are basic my needs. I did invest some more of my own money in the company, and right now it's a bit challenging. I might need to invest a little bit more, and so far I'm basically keeping the money in the company.
Nona?
Well, when I first started, it was also through personal savings. And what I did in my first year was I made sure that I kept overheads almost non-existent. So I would work out of my home. And for the kitchen, I would be renting by pay by the hour. So that way, I didn't have to pay for any kitchen equipment. I didn't have to be tied down to a monthly rental agreement. I was literally just paying for the hours that I was using. So by doing that, I didn't have to put in a lot of money up front. It was just it was about maybe $10,000, $20,000 for the first year. And slowly, as we grew bigger, I could then just fund the business from the revenues that were coming in because I was charging my customers through credit card transactions. That meant that I would get the money straight away, and I had, you know, 30 days or so to pay my suppliers. So that's how I would manage it slowly. But as I'm growing the business, I'm definitely looking at other sources of investment, and I'm also actually checking out Working Solutions. They actually have a good program right now where I think they're offering loans from anywhere from $5,000 to $50,000, and it's only like 4 to 6% that they're charging, and it's a up to a five-year term agreement. So I definitely think that for small businesses who are starting up or businesses that have been around for a couple of years and want to get money or borrow money, they would be a very good source to look at right now.
Molly?
We started with $15,000 of our own money, and the business has just been funding itself. In the beginning, we weren't paying ourselves an appropriate salary, and then as it grew, we were able to. And we have a line of credit from the bank, which we haven't used yet, but it's there just in case.
Okay, a couple of you mentioned mentors and
can
resources. I'm sorry, Gabrielle.
I just wanted to say I'm self-funded. My grandparents are actually here in the audience. I've saved every single cent I've gotten since I was a kid, and all those birthday checks and Christmas checks, they didn't get spent. They got all put into savings, and but I actually didn't have to start out with a lot like you. I have very low overhead, and all the money that I make goes back into the business, so I'm growing the business like that. But I don't. I didn't have to start with a lot.
Great. But. Okay. You mentioned TMC Working Solutions, and I know there's a lot of free resources for small businesses in the city. and or mentor programs and women's initiative, things like that. Have any of you used any of those resources? And you could talk to that a little bit. Molly, you mentioned a QuickBook. They have a QuickBooks program, or
yeah, the SBA has a lot of programs, and if you enroll in one of their programs, you're then most of them, not all of them, but the QuickBooks program I joined, and I was then eligible for 10 hours of counseling with or consulting with a professional in that industry. Happened to be a bookkeeper who is now our bookkeeper. Wasn't initially, but as we grew, we needed one. And it's totally free. You get 10 hours of free one-on-one with someone. It's a really great program. And they have a whole list of programs. SBA.org, I think, is the website. And it's right around here somewhere.
Yeah, I think it's just one book down.
Right there.
Yeah, Second and Market. I know I took a lot of their classes as well. They have like a whole restaurant class series where they would teach you things like food costing to, you know, restaurant marketing. And for like $25, you get a whole day of training. So that's very good value for money. And as Molly said, they also provide like 10 hours of free consulting that you have to apply for, and then they will have one of the industry experts work with you on different aspects of your business. I think for me, I didn't get financial consulting. I got like marketing, PR and marketing consulting for 10 hours from SBA.
Gabrielle?
So when I first started, I joined a group called Ladies Who Launch, which at the time was a really great group. I don't know if I would recommend it now, just because the nature is more, it's a women's environment, so women entrepreneurs, so they're all women sort of in the same position. A lot of them were doing really well, so it was very inspiring. It was a warm, sort of fuzzy, inspiring environment. They've actually kind of progressed to a new group called Hatch, where they actually focus more on the business questions. I appreciate what Ladies Who Launch did for me just because it sort of got me motivated and inspired, but I do wish there was a little bit more business know-how in the group. But there are the groups that you mentioned. I mean, there's so many groups available, so many outlets to help answer your questions, and not particularly expensive either.
And Molly, didn't Hands on Gourmet win an award of some kind? Right?
I think you're referring to the Make Mine a Million business.
Right.
And what that is, they've since Hands on Gourmet became part of the program, it's changed a little bit. And I can tell you more about it if you're interested. Ask me after I have some literature about it also. But what it did for me was it gave me the confidence as a business person. Really, they make you focus on your business goals, reaching your financial goals, staying focused on the big picture instead of the day-to-day. They emphasize if you're doing everything, then how are you going to kind of expand and grow your business if that's your goal? They're very growth-oriented. And it's a national program. It's great. Make Mine a Million Dollar Business program, and it's still called that, and they're program is the Make Mine a Million Business Race, known as the M3 Race, which has made it more accessible to more people. It's an interesting program. I have information if you're interested.
Kiko, did you have anything to add?
Yeah, I'd like to mention the place I took business planning classes is called Women's Initiative for Self-Employment. Their acronym in Spanish is ALAS, which is something like Latinas for Autosuficiencia. They have an office here in San Francisco, also one in Oakland, and they are a great resource for people who want to start their businesses. They offer these business planning classes, and also after you graduate, they have a Success Link program, which is geared for graduates, and then they divide it into different stages, people who are starting, people who are in business, etc. There is also Renaissance Entrepreneurship Center, which is another great resource right here on Folsom and Fifth. They also do business planning classes, help you to they just help you to understand better the aspects of business. And I think that's the other girls talk about it. Yeah.
I just want to add a word about the Hatch Network. This is a new startup in the city for women entrepreneurs. And what it is going to be an educational program, 12-week classes for emerging and expanding businesses. It's not free. This is not a free resource. But it's www.hatchnetwork.com if you're interested in looking at that. I think it's going to be a great program for people who want to learn the nuts and bolts of running a business. Mm-hmm. Okay, on to employees. You all have fairly labor-intensive businesses, so I thought you could talk a little bit about how you find good employees and what you do to keep them. And Nona, would you like to start?
Sure. Well, I've tried lots of different avenues, you know, from Craigslist was one of them, just looking for drivers, to using the CCA to look for people who might be interested in part-time help in the kitchen. And I think the third one, which has worked really well, is really referrers and word of mouth, because that's how you get people that are really good, because someone you know has recommended them. The kitchen that I work in, because it's one of those where we share with many other caterers, there's always a lot of people working there for other caterers, you know, because there are a lot of independent contractors who will work at parties. And that's how I actually first got to know a few of the sous chef or prep cook, because I see them working there for other people. I get to see how well they work, and then eventually I hire them. So definitely, I think my most successful employment strategy to date is through referrers. Yeah.
Gabrielle?
Well, I'm looking to hire my first employee right now. I have an intern, which is really great, but when I'm ready to hire more, I get about 2 resumes a week, so everyone wants to bake cakes right now, I think. So I'm definitely bombarded with people that want to work for me, so I know I won't have a hard time finding somebody.
Molly?
Same as Nona, word of mouth. Most of our employees are chefs, and they work for us part-time, and the network of chefs in the Bay Area is really tight-knit, and it's been a great way for us to find people who are right for Hands-On Gourmet. Craigslist has been a good resource. We've gotten better at our listings. They're now very specific, so we don't get thousands and thousands of replies. Those are our 2 primary sources.
Well, in my case, I've tried Craigslist in the beginning. This was in 2007 when I hired my first employee. I've had already a turnover of, I think, 4, which is a lot, but it's not really, doesn't mean much about me or the company. It just means that it's hard work when you're working in a kitchen, and I have these employees are basically to help me with the production aspect. So right now I have 2 part-time employees, and basically I came across them through contacts and people that referred them to me.
What did we do without Craigslist? No wonder the newspapers are going out of business. So how much does it cost to run a Craigslist ad?
$75.
And you have to keep renewing it every how often?
I think it's for months or something.
Okay, there are several questions from the audience, of course, about the economy, the current economy, and has it affected your business? So I know especially small businesses really get hurt in bad economies, but it doesn't have to be that way, depending on how you market, what your product is. So would you like to talk about that? Nona, would you like to start?
Sure. I think the economy has definitely affected my business, especially starting from about July, August last year. You know, I've had clients who've been with me for 2 years call me up and say that, you know, I lost my job, I'm sorry. You know, we love your food and we'll be back when we get a new job. And that's happened a few times to clients who say that, well, you know, I'm looking to buy a place, so I need to cut back on expenses. So I would say that that's definitely a big thing that has happened in the last 6 to 7 months. We've seen things turning around in the last month or so, I think, as people are feeling a little bit more optimistic. The other thing that I've noticed is that if you look at Whole Foods, even Whole Foods these days have newsletters that go out calling themselves the whole deal, you know, no more the whole paycheck. So trying to really sell the whole value for money angle. And that's something that I'm trying to look at as well, which is if you think about it, you know, instead of eating in a restaurant, which costs a lot more for two persons, you could have a restaurant quality meal at home at half the price with my service. So one way that I'm trying to do to shift it around a little bit as well is to correct or target the positioning, which is actually eating well at home is not necessarily a luxury. It is a treat compared to going to a restaurant, but sometimes eating healthy is also more important than not eating healthy, especially in current times like this, where you have to work hard or where, you know, where so many other things are affecting you. It's actually important to eat healthy. So I would say that in general, it has been affecting, the economy has affected our business, but we're slowly seeing a shift in, I think, since April.
Kika?
Well, definitely in my case as well, it has taken a very serious toll since I would say I only started seeing the effects of the economy probably January this year. It has slowed down, even though my product now has some distribution throughout California. But I'm finding out that I have to invest a lot more to promote my products because people are not spending, you know, they're not in the mode of spending more than they earn anymore. So basically, my product is not a basic need. I don't, at least it is for me and some of my friends, but not to the majority of the population. So it's people, that's something people will cut off from their budgets. And it has definitely taken a toll, and I'm trying to get a bit creative, maybe try different venues for retail other than the way I'm going right now. So it has affected my business.
Okay. Molly?
It has definitely impacted our business. Most of our business is corporate, so companies just sort of froze last November. It really kind of hit us. And I don't want to seem extravagant. For some, what we're offering is just for fun, and it's not justified. As far as how it's impacting our bottom line, we don't have a crushing overhead, which is nice. So we've just turned everything down, scaled back everything. To adjust. And I don't know when it's going to get better. Does anyone have a read on what's going on?
Well, while cakes aren't really a basic need,
weddings
are don't go anywhere, and people still have birthdays, and I fortunately have not really been too affected by the recession, which is great. I don't have a lot of employees that I need to, you know, keep or fire, so it's, you know, it's just me. But I was thinking I would be raising my prices this last year, but instead I just kept them the same. That's sort of how I adjusted, because people still panic because the wedding cake is a high-ticket item. So,
well, the good news is the stock market's, what, up 6% since early March? What a relief. And I really think that affects people and how they spend their money, whether the stock market is up or down. And so hopefully that's going to continue. And Obama's policies are going to turn things around quicker than we think. There was a kind of a scary article in the New York Times about how Americans are starting to save again. And, yeah, usually what happens is a recession hits, everyone saves. The minute it's done, you start spending again. This time they say, we think it's going to be different, but they're not really saying why they think it's going to be different. So, I don't know, jury's still out on that. Okay, talking about marketing, I think if you have a really good marketing plan, even in bad times, you can gain new customers. So I'm wondering, what is your favorite marketing technique? What has worked the best for you? And also, just an add-on, social media is becoming huge for almost every business, and I'm wondering if you all are using social media as part of your marketing strategy.
Sure.
Go ahead.
So marketing is very important for me. I do all my own PR. I network with a lot of different groups, so I'm always out there at least a couple of nights a week. I'm out in either in a wedding industry networking group or a women's entrepreneurial networking group. You name it, I'm there. I feel that I build the best relationships face-to-face and one at a time. So my best, you know, contacts are event planners and venues. But it's really important to establish those relationships face-to-face. And, you know, it might take a little bit longer, but those are the relationships that last and that are important. And I definitely use a lot of social networking tools. Facebook is absolutely essential for me because I'll meet people on the industry and then I'll be friends with them on Facebook, and that way they, you know, people tag photos of my cakes, and so those, you know, people that I might not know very well are seeing what I'm doing. So many times I go to parties and I meet somebody that I've met only one or two times, but they've told me that they've seen all my cakes on what's happening on Facebook. I was like, that's great. But it's invaluable, definitely.
Nona?
Well, I think I'm still trying to figure out what the right mix is for Cook SF. I've definitely tried everything in the first couple of years, from, you know, online advertising, city search, word of mouth, mother's group, newsletter advertising, what else, PR, so on and so forth. I would say that having tried lots of different avenues, the ones which I feel are best value for money in terms of marketing would still be word of mouth. And when I say word of mouth, I mean it in a few different ways. One is definitely my customers telling other customers, telling their friends about it, because mine is a product that if you look at it, if you don't pay any attention, you're not going to get it in 3 seconds. But if you have 30 seconds and I'm explaining it to you, you will get it. So you need that touch there. And we've also been working recently in the last 6 months with nutritionists, chiropractors, acupuncturists, people in the alternative healthcare space who work with lots of their clients who are very interested in eating healthy. And they have also referred a lot of clients to us as well. So we're still working a lot of different avenues, but primarily the final, I would say that the one that makes someone a customer is usually word of mouth. And once they've tried the product, they usually love it, and I've had pretty much about 60 to 70% conversion rate for someone who tries my product once to then continuing to order every week.
Yeah. Kika?
Well, in my case, my product line is sold in retail stores. So the best marketing technique for me so far has been doing demos in stores, you know, sampling where people get to try the product. And I usually do it myself just because it's also a two-way road for me. I learn a lot from consumers. I get their feedback, their input, and it's the best for me. And then word of mouth follows naturally. So that's the best way for me.
I would say our best marketing piece is our website, and it continues to be. We've tried advertising, and we tried print advertising, which wasn't successful at all. It's really hard to track. It was for us. We also have a Google AdWords campaign. We send out a monthly newsletter, and all of these are, with the exception of the Google AdWords campaign, they're low cost to maintain over time. Yelp has been a huge source of referrals for us. So we've started asking customers if they do Yelp, if they wouldn't mind writing a review. And a lot of people find us on Yelp. It's like the second highest referral to our website. And to social media. I use YouTube, Flickr, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. I think that's it. Stumble upon, trying to figure out. And as far as the only way I can really track the benefit of that is talking to people, word of mouth. And word of mouth, I would say, even is above the website. That's just the best referral. So I'm experimenting with social media, and I think it is effective. I just need to figure out a way to track it. And Google Analytics has been my first attempt at seeing how people are finding us and if it's a referral from Twitter or Facebook. I'm starting to kind of get some stats, but
I just wanted to add, I think that marketing materials is really important. I think all of us have really nice, shiny, lots of pictures. I think, I'm sure you've seen my brochure. I'm hoping nobody is going to throw that away. You know, it's something that you would want to keep. So I think high quality brochures and high quality website is really important. People don't want to see outdated websites. I know when I look at one, it's just I'm gone in a second. I won't stay. Yelp also is very huge for me. Almost, I think half my business probably comes from Yelp. I was going to say something else, but I forgot.
What about negative reviews on Yelp?
I know a lot of restaurants hate Yelp because of the negative reviews. In fact, I think now restaurant owners can answer back. I think that's
Yeah.
Are you afraid of that?
I'm horrified of the day I get a bad review. Absolutely. Yeah.
I did get one bad review on my Brazilian honey cakes, and I was so upset. I tried to contact the person and said, I want to send you a bag of fresh honey cakes and see if you change your mind. But that person was not available for contact, unfortunately.
I think that, thankfully, I have quite a personal relationship with my clients because we have their email addresses, they buy direct from us, and we always get feedback from them quite frequently when they like or don't like something, so it gives us an opportunity to correct any mistakes that we might have made, or if they have a negative impression and something is not right, we address it. So that usually means that they don't go to Yelp. Because if they're unhappy, the first recourse is with us, and if we don't solve the problem, then they go to Yelp. And we make sure that we always correct anything, whether or not we think it was our mistake. We believe firmly that the customer is always right. Yeah.
I am a little bit scared of the negative Yelp review. We don't have any, so luckily, but I'm just...
The truth is, I can always tell when someone's a nasty Yelper, and I just ignore their review anyway most of the time. What about blogging? Do any of you blog on a regular?
I blog, but I keep it nice and sweet and simple. I usually just put images and maybe a little blurb about where the venue was, if I think it was extra special. But I definitely think it's important to blog. And that's what I was going to say earlier. Getting other people to blog about you is also key because that's just more attention, and you can see in the analytics that people are coming from different bloggers. So also in my attempt to market, I meet with bloggers in hopes that they'll write about me. So,
yeah, I definitely agree that getting people to blog about your product is great because not only does it create reference to your website, but it actually improves your SEO ranking, your search engine optimization, which means that when somebody does a Google search, you would naturally appear higher on the rankings, on the search results, just because there's a lot more content written about you. And for that reason, it's good to actually blog because it just generates fresh content on your website. Having said that, it's one of the things that I haven't had time to do very regularly. So I'm guilty. So I did try doing it regularly once a month for maybe about 6 months, and then I've had trouble just keeping up. So what we've done instead is we've gone with Facebook, where it's much easier just to post, you know, little post and pictures, so on and so forth, than to write a proper blogging article. Because I was going to, oh, I really want to write the 10 great tips about stir-frying, you know, especially since we do a lot of stir-fry kits. But when am I going to find that 45 minutes where I can sit down and write the article? So I think that's my biggest challenge. I'm all for it. I just haven't had enough time to do it regularly.
We have a blog. Hands On Gourmet has a blog. I don't write it. Our executive chef, Steven, does. See him over there. But we're actually going to bring it. It's kind of hidden in our website, and we're going to bring it onto the front page. It's gaining traction, and it's not really a sales piece. It's more about Steven's dreams about food, but I know it's a useful tool, and I'm thinking about starting a blog to have more. It's all for SEO.
Yep.
So. I don't blog. I have the hardest time keeping up with a blog. I tried to start one, and the thought that just comes to my mind is, if everybody blogs, who's going to be reading about it? It's just it's too much information. I mean, really, I cannot deal with it. I would love to, but I don't have the time.
Personally, I think that having a really, really good website, if you don't do anything else, is so important. And then getting people to link to your website. Do you work on that too, related businesses linking? Because then you get higher rankings as well. But this brings up a whole topic about business owners and wearing too many hats. Has anybody read The E-Myth? The book about business owners, so they're really, really good at something. Think, oh, wow, I'm going to start a business, be really successful. And then they do everything except for what they started the business for. And I think learning to outsource and hire interns or whatever to do the things that, like blogging. I mean, why couldn't you hire an intern maybe to do a blog? So I'm wondering, do you feel like you try and wear too many hats? And maybe talk to what is your key skill, like your best use? And then do you think you're doing that most of the time or not? Gabrielle, you want to start?
I wear all the hats. Fortunately, right now, it's very manageable, and I still enjoy all the aspects. I love QuickBooks. I love entering everything and counting things, and so that's still fun. The only thing that really is distracting is calls when I'm working decorating. Decorating and designing is what I would like to be doing all the time, but it's my business, so it's kind of my baby, and I love it, and so everything is still sort of new and enjoyable. So I think maybe in a year I might change my mind, but right now it's fine.
Okay. Nona?
I definitely wore all the hats when I first started in the first year of business, and now I'm slowly trying to get a few hats off my head, which is good. I suppose because I don't come from the food background, my key skill set based on what I've been working on in the last 8 to 10 years or more is really about working with people in teams. And I think that was actually a struggle for me when I first started the business because I was not working in a team. I was working just by myself. So I couldn't actually leverage on one of my key skill set. I think that as the company has grown, I've really enjoyed outsourcing things out. So now I'm able to leverage my skill set, which is actually just getting the most out of people. So I have a production team in the kitchen that I can work with, plan the menu with. I'm working with someone who's helping with customer service. You know, I hired a virtual assistant who sits in LA, who's helping me with some of the marketing things. And that's been great for me. So I'm just slowly outsourcing everything that I can and also rebuilding some of the back end of my website to automate a lot of the fulfillment. So, yeah.
Well, I do still wear many, many hats. You guys saw me outside doing a little demo, which is what I often do in stores. My preferred area to work in my business is the area of production. That's what I love doing, which is the baking. And it's actually very therapeutic for me. I can bake and think about the business, but then other things pile up. So it's very hard, especially now that I can't really afford to hire people to help me with some basic things. I mean, I probably could need an assistant of some kind, but I can't really afford it right now. So I still wear most of the hats.
I started with two partners, so I never had to do everything, but a couple of years ago, as our business was growing really fast and we didn't have employees yet, it felt like I was doing everything. Now we have a really solid team. I have a great VP of operations who handles the transition from the sale to the production really well. And I think if I could just focus on a few things, it would be sales and business development. I still sort of get caught in the office, I feel, but it could just be because I'm in a routine and I can't get out of it.
I think one benefit of this bad economy is there are a lot of people looking for work, even part-time work. Also, there's a lot of intern programs now. College students get credit for working in businesses, and they don't require pay. I don't know the names of the businesses, but there's a couple. Do you know?
Yeah, I was going to mention University of Dreams is a fabulous program. All of you, I'll put you in touch with this person. Students pay to be a part of it, so they're motivated. They want to learn. They come from all over the country to San Francisco. They're housed at a local school. All their meals are taken care of. They have transportation. It's just a really solid program, and we've had really, really excellent interns through them. You can pay them if you want. They don't expect pay. We usually opt for the college credit option if they want it. I'm sure there are others.
Yeah. I'm about to hire one for the summer. I can hardly wait. Okay, there's several audience questions about scalability of your businesses. So have you thought about that? Are you going to expand? What if, you got a whole bunch of business, big account all of a sudden? Are you ready to take in that business? Who would like to be first answering?
Well, I'd like to mention I had
originally planned my business to go one route, which was, well, I decided first to be the manufacturer of my products, which is a really hard thing to accomplish on top of, you know, then selling, et cetera, being a single. I don't have any partners or anything. So I did plan on distributing and making mine a model in which my product would be sold in markets. And right now I am being faced with, you know, just maybe taking it back because I'm realizing I can only do that if I had more help on my side, if I had a partner or something like that. So it is a scalable, viable business, but it's up to me whether I really want to keep growing with it or just scale it back. And I actually like the fact that it could be a smaller business, more local and more community-oriented. That's actually what I really like. So it is scalable if I did have chosen to go to a co-packer, which is hiring a third party to manufacture the products for you, and then basically you just manage your business. It would have been way more viable. But right now, I really like controlling the production, so I'm probably resizing it to try to go to another different business model.
I admit that I'm very comfortable how I am right now. It's really nice. I still have a lot of time off, and I can work. It's a really nice balance, but I do imagine expanding, having a lot of employees, and being able to, you know, have more accounts and in hotels and being bigger.
Once you get that business plan done. Molly, do you want to talk about scalability?
Sure. We're planning to expand, and it's just our struggle is where to take the first step. And I think we're going to stay local in Sacramento and wine country. There's a lot of business up there, and it's just far enough that our event managers go into overtime if they have to drive there and back, and it's a really long day. So we're going to start there. And my long-term goal is to stamp out these operations in locations all over the place and then sell to someone who sees it as a franchise opportunity. So.
We're running out of time, so I'm going to ask direct a question to one of you to answer. Sure. There's a couple of questions about professional kitchens. And when we got together to talk before this, we talked for a long time about the whole getting a kitchen and all that. So who would like to, would one of you like to address that?
Sure.
Okay, go ahead.
What about professional kitchens?
Is it absolutely necessary to work from a professional kitchen when producing a product? So the safety regulations and all those issues that come up, do you have to certify your kitchen or work out of your home, things like that?
It depends on exactly what you're trying to do. Like, for example, when I ran my pilot for 20 friends, you know, I didn't charge them. I just asked them to contribute something for the cost of the food. So I did it out of my own home kitchen, but that's not official. If you're a personal chef, you're allowed to work in your client's kitchen, but you have to prepare everything at their place. You're not supposed to be prepping in your own home kitchen. If you're a caterer or anything else, you're doing any sort of food products, you have to work out of a county-certified approved kitchen, and that's selling direct, like if you're a caterer. And there are lots of kitchens available to rent by the hour, so you can keep your overheads really low. Like La Cucina is one of them. There's one in South San Francisco. There are quite a few. And if you need a list of names, feel free to contact me afterwards. I'll be happy to share with you some of the names that I have. If you're going to go into wholesale, then that's a completely different kettle of fish. If you're going to go into wholesale, I think Kika can probably talk more about that as well. Then you're talking about, are you selling dairy and poultry, or are you selling fish and vegetarian? You know, then there will be things like FDA certified facility, which is easy to get. You just go online, fill in some forms, and that's it. But the California State Health Department regulations, that's much harder to get. And of course, then there's the last one, the golden hurdle that I think stops most businesses from selling any meat wholesale, which is the USDA certified kitchen. Those are usually not available for rent because it involves a lot of processes just to get that certification. It's specific to your company and not to the facility. And to get one of those, to build one of those from scratch, could easily cost you at least $1 million or more, which I think is one of the highest barrier in terms of trying to sell meat wholesale, like processed meat products or, you know, organic meat products to like Whole Foods or something. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I wanted to add something to that. Working in your home is a complete nightmare, so I would never say to do that. There are a lot of bakeries that, you know, everyone wants a little extra cash, and if you wanted to just do a little something, you could probably approach almost any bakery, your neighborhood bakery, and see if they'd be willing to let you work in their space for an hour or so, and you'd be surprised. I think a lot of people would be open to doing that.
Yeah.
Someone asked a question if your feminine charm helps you. I have a feeling that might help you. this is one of my favorite questions, and you may all want to answer this. You are all so inspiring. How can we help you grow your businesses?
Tell people about us.
Yes.
It's all word of mouth, that really.
Definitely.
Just buy Kika's treats.
Kika, tell us where you can find your treats.
Well, you can find throughout the city. My favorite place to go is Rainbow Grocery in the Mission. It's it was my first account, and where they can be found at the best price. By rights, I mean, mostly independent gourmet stores throughout the Bay Area, pasta shop in the East Bay. Some Whole Foods have it, but it's really expensive. And
you know,
and
Kika
online.
Did all of this herself. She called on all those grocery stores herself and got all. And those are the best stores in the Bay Area, right? I'd say that's pretty impressive.
But they're very supportive. I mean, I don't know if I've had luck or if my product is really good, but it's just I've been very lucky with all the accounts I've opened. They all like my product. They sell really well. And now as I grow, I'm faced with more challenges. When you get to the bigger players, it's just way harder, and it's amazing how they just double the prices and it becomes really expensive. But so far, I guess I've been quite lucky.
Anything else anyone want
to? Yeah, I would say try the service out. You know, there's a 20% off when you first try it, and you can enjoy a 3-course gourmet for two for less than $40. I mean, how good is that? Mostly organic? Or tell your friends about it. We make great gift certificates for new moms. We get a lot of that, you know. So if you have, yeah. So if you have any friend, you know, who's becoming a new mom, they need some help, it's great. We sell a lot of gift certificates as well for sometimes people are sick or may have just had an operation, can't really cook, but want healthy food. So, yeah. So if you can think of someone who might need it, buy a gift cert or just tell friends about us.
Okay. Just two more questions. Okay. would you do anything different now? Looking back on the progress of the past couple of years?
Well, if I can say something, it's definitely a learning curve. Owning a business is a constant learning curve. So I guess I could have done everything different by now. And it's crazy. I mean, I'm just never stopping. I just changed my labels. You know, I'm always thinking. People say, I like your website. I hate my website. I want to do a new one. And it's... I really would do a lot, but basically I don't think you can know it before you start. So you have to start and then see how it goes and then reevaluate. To me, it's just a constant struggle for that. So I definitely would have done a lot of things different, especially planning the business a lot more. I think I just jumped into it. I was so excited to start it, and, you know, I just kind of, now I'm faced, I wish I could just take 6 months off and just rethink the whole thing, but I can't afford the time, so.
Well,
I agree with Kika. I would have done so many things different, but I think it's, you just learn by doing, and anyone who's thinking of starting a business should just do it. You'll learn as you go. There aren't too many mistakes that are so devastating that you can't recover from.
Yeah. I think I agree. I mean, there are definitely things that, you know, I look back, ooh, maybe that wasn't a good marketing spend. But if you don't try it once, you don't really know. Or hopefully, you know, could talk to someone about it. I think my lesson was I would rather not have tried to do everything myself for so long. It was definitely a good idea to, you know, outsource earlier, get help earlier, talk to people who are experts in the industry just to learn more. And, of course, my bigger question, big question sometimes, which is a couple years back, I have ex-bosses saying, oh, do you need money? I'm like, no, not really. I don't really know what to do with it yet. You know, and now it's like, has anyone got money? So I wonder whether I should have gotten tried to grow more aggressively, you know, a year or two ago when money was more accessible. But then again, I may not have known what to best do with the money back then. So you never know. Yeah.
I wouldn't have done much different. When I think back of what I could have done, you know, gone really big, had a bakery with a storefront, I realized that that would have been a terrible idea. You know, I decided not to have a storefront, which saves on tremendously on overhead. So, you know, I just kept it really simple. I made it really easy.
Yeah. Okay. All right. This is your chance to brag. So tell us your greatest success, and it can be involving your current business or something you're really proud of in the past, something personal you would like us to know. Just brag. Molly?
I think our most recent accomplishment that I'm proud of is we were ranked the fifth fastest growing, privately held growing company in the Bay Area by the Business Times last year. And that just felt huge to be recognized among such other big companies. And it's all relative. I was looking at our revenue, and I was looking at, like, $255 million. They're, like, number 22. But it was still felt really good to be a part of that group.
I'll let you go. Well,
I love getting published, and I've been published a lot, so I always brag about that. I like getting – I'm in a lot of wedding magazines. I've gotten a few little interviews where they actually care about me as opposed to my cakes, which is always exciting. The San Francisco Chronicle magazine is going to do a profile on me in June, so that, like, the picture is just as big as the article. So I had to pose with cakes. Hopefully it'll look good. But, yeah, that's pretty big. And what else? I got into Daily Candy. That's kind of hard to do.
Do you know her?
What was that?
Can you share her name with us?
I can. I'll see what I can do.
Supposedly Daily Candy. Does everyone know what Daily Candy is? It's an email service. They email tips about good products, restaurants. And supposedly if you get on that list and that email list, your business just blows up, right?
Yeah, I was on a page shared. It was like a wedding post. So I was on there with a lot of people. It wasn't a profile all about me, which I hear you can get a lot of hits. But I got 600 hits that day.
Wow.
So that's a lot.
Yeah.
But supposedly they don't like it when you try and get on their email. They have to find you. So I don't know how you do that.
You could pitch to them, actually. Yeah, but yeah. They are quite selective, but you can pitch to them. And I know my website traffic was like 8-4, 10-4 when they first covered me on like 2nd of January. And my business, which was tiny then, doubled with that one single posting. So yeah.
Have you all been on Daily Candy?
No.
Okay.
We pitched them. They didn't like it.
You know what? Another great venue for small businesses is View by the Bay.
Oh, yeah. I was on that, too.
And they're great. They love to feature small businesses. I was on that once. I loved it. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
And people do see you. Okay. So that is the end of our program. And I would like to read off our panelists for our podcast audience. This has been a program of the Bay Gourmet Forum of the Commonwealth Club, Entrepreneurial Women in the Food Business. Our panelists are Kika Bescher, owner of Kika's Treats, a small artisanal company that handcrafts chocolate-covered organic baked goods. Gabrielle Feuersinger, owner, Cake Coquette, a custom wedding cake and specialty cake design company. Molly Fuller, owner and president of Hands On Gourmet, a cooking party and culinary team-building company. And Nona Lim, owner of Cook SF, a ready-to-cook meals-to-go company. And I'm Kathy Curtis, financial planner and chair of the Bay Gourmet Forum of the Commonwealth Club. Thank you all for coming this evening and being such a great audience.
Thank you.
I'm sure our panelists will stay if you have any questions you'd like to.